a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you're going to meet on this podcast would consider themselves to be extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living. That's exactly what makes them extra to me, and I am excited for you to meet them. All right, so I am a big fan of language, as critics of my verbosity will often remind me, verbosity, well, I don't even know how to say it. And anyway, one of my favorite linguistic features are idioms, okay? These are the quirky little phrases that we've all used to describe something very familiar, but we use words that actually have nothing to do with what they're describing. So for example, you know, raining cats and dogs, or busier than a one-armed paper hanger. That's one of my favorites. So, you know, we use these all the time, and I particularly love idioms that have biblical roots, you know, the phrases that everybody's using every day, but very few people know that they actually came from Scripture, you know, like the writing is on the wall. Okay? That actually comes from the book of Daniel, describing a vision that a king had of a hand literally writing a warning on the wall of his palace that he would soon be overthrown. Okay, and sometimes idioms don't even have to be whole phrases, like the word scapegoat, which evidently first appeared in the book of Leviticus, and it describes a ritual performed by the high priest in which two goats literally were chosen. One was slaughtered and the other one was sent free into the wilderness as a like this collective atonement for the sins of the people. So there you go, scapegoat. So anyway, why this kind of long now lesson in idioms? Well, it's because of today's guest and the familiar idiom reminding us that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, which describes him to me. But describes him in reverse, okay? Because most of the time when we say that idiom, we're referencing the apple, you know, not the tree. But I made our guest acquaintance a few months back the other way around through his daughter, who is a very fine friend of our third daughter, Josie, who is whose voice, by the way, is the voice you hear in the intro and the outro of this show. Anyway, Josie has spent the last 4 years raving about this friend, who is the apple, okay, in our little idiom, and, you know, about her character, her spirit, her friendship, her faith, which then led me to her father, the tree, our guest here, that we're all honored to be meeting today. For as the Bible verse in Matthew chapter 7 says, a good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit. And neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. So he is indeed a tree bearing the best fruit, evidenced by his daughter, which already says a heck of a lot about him. So let's welcome today's Manna Man, Mr. Mark Dawson. Hey, Mark.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate the warm invitation. I was actually a little worried when you started with the scapegoat idiom. And I was wondering which direction we're going to go, but
you'd be the good goat in that one too, even if we did that. So, you know, and actually, just speaking of the idiom that I used there for you, I so wanted, just full disclosure, I so wanted that idiom with the apple falling far from the tree. I wanted that to be biblical, and I thought when the passage from Matthew, because that passage was just was one of the readings just over the last week, one of the daily readings. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'll bet you that's the connection. And it's not at all. The apple one actually was attributed to like Ralph Waldo Emerson or something like that. It has no biblical roots at all. So anyway, swing and miss there. But hey, I actually would like to jump kind of right in or stay on that little idiom track here about apples and trees and fruit. Because really, Josie's spoken so highly of your daughter, which then, you know, leads us here today, a couple of dads talking. So you're clearly setting an example of what it means to, you know, raise a household in the faith and create an environment where faith is important. So what was it like for you growing up? Rewind. Has this always been part of, you know, Mark Dawson's life?
Yes, it's always been a part. I would say it's increased over time, but it was my growing up, I grew up as in a family of faith, but I would say it intensified a little bit, as I grew. I'd say my basis for, my belief in God and Jesus and my, that was established early, and I would say it stuck with me. So I would say I had, in a lot of ways, I would refrain to that as the academic faith. But if, like a lot of people, I think I took me a lot of time before that developed into what I would call a walk with Jesus and in a trust. But I certainly attribute my parents and my upbringing for setting example of that. I saw their faithfulness and their marriage and our family grow as I grew, through my younger years as into a teenager. And that certainly set an example, took me probably, at my own pace for that to grow in that faith. But it was certainly an example as I grew up, and it was part of our upbringing from the beginning.
Yeah. Do you remember any, we talk a lot about role models on the show and when we were all young and, coming of age and especially men, whether they're dads or uncles or maybe teachers, coaches, were there any guys in your life throughout those kind of formative years that when you look back, maybe not at the time didn't seem like it, but as you look back on the man of faith that you've turned into, were there any of those guys along the way that now that you look back were particularly influential or kind of formative?
There's a couple moments that I recall are memorable. The first one, I would have been in fifth grade. So it was a summer Bible sports camp, right? So so that like a lot of people, that was the time I remember dedicating my life to Jesus, in a camp environment here. But that to your question, that was the first time where I was really hanging with athletes and young men, a little older than me, but that sort of set an example, saying, "Hey, these guys are cool." I'm putting air quotes around that, athletic and open about their faith. And that was a new experience to me at that point, and it sort of set an example, saying, "Hey, that's kind of cool." I'd say to set an example. And then I'd have to also add that, I absolutely put my dad in that faith as a faith mentor. He's still with it. He's still alive today and still is. So it's been a sort of a lifelong mentorship, but just watching him, he's very open, open with his faith. And he's really set an example in being able to do that, not just within his family, but within friends, within his work environment, which has always been something that's personally been challenging for me. But set examples, saying you can have a life, a business and an external life here where you can be open about with your faith and with your coworkers, and that was an example I saw just when I was starting my career that really resonated with me and stuck with me to this day, and even. To this day, I'll I can go to a grocery store with him, in a month from now, and he might turn to the person in the checkout line and ask him how their day's doing and ask him if they know Jesus. So he's one of those examples that it's been great for me.
Those examples are so great too. I've got those guys in my life too, and I've always wanted to be that guy, because they come so effortlessly, and so those are great examples. And I know. You have had, speaking of the work stuff, and then we can come back to it later as well. But since you brought it up, you have had a long career in a very, kind of conspicuously corporate, culture. You know, it's not like you're, mm-hmm. you know, running a shoe repair shop on your own and where you can kind of hang your shingle out and talk about what you want and do what you want and you know, kind of like, well, get your yeah. shoes fixed here if you want, and if not, go somewhere else. And so you have spent a career needing to operate in a very large, you know, kind of ecosystem that you know, stereotypically, corporate America is not known for its evangelical, you know, kind of vibe. So and yet you've been there a long time. So you presumably you've got a lot of goodwill. People know, you know, who you are. Have you felt as your career has progressed, has your, you know, confidence or just inhibition maybe to not be as either vocal or expressive, has that changed over time, or has it just been something that, you know, you kind of have to manage, which totally get that. I mean, I did that too, do that too. or has that evolved as you've, you know, just matured?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It's been quite a journey. So I've been, over 30 years with a very large IT manufacturer that's pretty well known. And it, what I would say is early years, the culture, and I think this is not unique to my company, but I think it's our environment today, right? Early on, it was very, you sort of stay in your lanes, very conservative and reserved. And so I think people, there wasn't a lot of openness about it, but at the same time, there wasn't a lot. It was just a void, I would say, in a lot of areas. But I would say with the sort of the advent of social media internally and externally, and you know, obviously it exists externally, but even within large corporations, right? There's a very open culture, and there's social media tools that allow communication between the whole company, and I found that it's been interesting to see the multiple viewpoints are now in the open, where people stand on issues and thought things becomes very, very open, right? So the barriers that sort of existed in large corporations have been for a large part knocked down, just like they have been, I think, in our, you know, the rest of our world. So what I found is that it's been very interesting because you'll now have a lot of open discussion about viewpoints, which in theory opens the opportunity to talk more about your faith and your view on things, but it also opens you up to, there's just a lot of potential for, you know, different kinds of conversations. But
it's open season.
It's open season, right? So you've got to put, to put yourself out there, it becomes, feels like it's a little more risky than it did in the past. So I have, I spent a lot of time thinking about that and dealing with it, but it's, but to your, the last point of your question is I do feel like I've got to the point where, been around long enough and have grown enough in my faith that it's I do have conversations with coworkers about that. I literally yesterday I offered to pray for one of my coworkers who's going through something. So just out of work conversation, having the comfort level to ask a name and offer to pray and just being able to have those conversations, it's not prohibited, but it took my comfort level to be able to open up to people to
That's great. Yeah. I think that's wonderful. And not to get, I don't want to get too far off on any sort of social or political commentary, but I would say that I think this openness that you're speaking of, in business and, life is great, by and large, great. I do sometimes feel, so now this is where I'll dip my toe into a little bit of hopefully not too controversial. I feel like sometimes the appetite for this broader open conversation where everybody gets to talk about everything, I feel like that applies to everything but faith. I feel like everything else is open, but we're still, whether it's guys like you and I who are, self-conscious about it or respectful about it, maybe that's it. We just don't want to offend anybody. Or there's just, it still seems like such a charged area where we seem to be encouraging and celebrating every other viewpoint and every other topic and in any medium except faith. And I don't know if you see that as well, but it's just something that it's still a little quizzical for me why that is the case.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's well stated, right? It feels charged, right? So it takes it just takes a little more effort to put yourself out there, and I think it's still something I want to continue to grow into, but I've taken baby steps.
Yep. Yep. Well, and that openness, that exposure, again, which is, I think, by and large, it's great. The more we're aware, the more our kids have been growing up. I mean, you and I are about the same age, and our kids have grown up in a very different world than we did. But when you think of raising a family in a faith tradition, you talked about your mom and dad and what a great example they were, just as my mom and dad were. But that time was very different than this time. And so what was it like as you and your wife were raising the family, raising the kids? Did you find it to be more similar or more maybe challenging than the experience your folks had when they were raising up little, the young Mark Dawson, the sapling Mark Dawson?
I don't know if the external environment was much more difficult. I can tell you there was sort of a moment where it flipped for me in terms of as a dad and a parent, and it was won't surprise a lot of people by the age, but it was September 11th. So yeah. Just prior to that, my daughter Josie's friend Tara, she wasn't born yet, but my other two, and I was at the point in my life where, like I sort of explained earlier, I believed in God. We were going to church, but my hands were firmly on the steering wheel, which would be the right analogy for it, right? And that was a moment where, as a sort of a young parent, and where so many things were sort of thrown into, you just realized you're not in control, no matter how you're planning your career and your family and your home and all those things. There was a moment there that was just where I. And I'll give a credit to the pastor of my church the Sunday after 9/11. To paraphrase what he said was, the United States is not the hope of the world, but Jesus Christ is. Mm. And that was, and those words just, even as I recited it, it strikes me. And it was a moment where I sort of said, okay, this is where I've got to surrender and really trust. Trust in God that He's got under control, and that's where I point where I feel like I sort of changed the way I viewed raising my kids and family and leading the family, and from that moment I can chart lots of other examples through there, but it was just one where I said, I've got to give up trying to control all of this because we're not in control, and it really changed the way a lot of things happened after that, including the way from a family perspective how we. Participated in our spiritual journey in the faith too. So I think that was, I'm thankful for that, the experience and how that sort of changed the trajectory, in my opinion.
No, I think that's a wonderful example of, I think I'm not good at all about citing scripture. I don't need cheat sheets, but I think it was Paul or maybe it could have been back that Joseph and the technical dream, but what God, what man intended for evil, God used for good. Yes. That's a great example of taking something and finding some grace and in it. So speaking of that, with your family, where we are not similar here, Mark, is you have boy and girls that you've raised. Yes. So you've got a little diversity there in terms of raising up kids in the faith, whereas we were blessed with four girls. As your kids grew up, in the church and looking at the example that you're setting, was it any different? Did you find any difference in either the receptivity or just maybe not that you were this mad scientist, with your beakers trying to formulate things, but were there approaches that you saw that worked better or better for a boy than the girls?
I don't know if I could take. So I would agree with you. I don't think I could take a lot of credit for any master planning there. I think there's a natural bond with my son. So within my family, I have an older daughter, a son, and my youngest. And there's an activity, and there's a chance to model and mentor with your son just due to the activities and so forth. And
sure.
That probably, well, it's not I'm not consciously doing it. I think it's a natural byproduct, right? In my case, we have an athletic son. We were in a lot of sports. There's a lot of time. One of my hobbies during that phase of life was coaching, right? So there was a lot of time spent there. Mm-hmm. And the best you can do, there's two things you can do. And the one thing I will take credit for is pray over my kids all the time, right? That's one thing we can control. And
amen.
And I certainly did that, but I'd also believe that, the time you spend together is a chance to model. So how are you modeling your behavior in a lot of different circumstances, right? And that's the one thing I could try to do. And that, that included, we made church a priority whenever we could. It wasn't not perfect attendance, right? There's a lot of people would know, sports and activities could have a really create a challenge on some of that. But we, I think it was clear that we did make it a priority and it was important. And then, just try to model the right behavior when in the right circumstances was about the best I could do.
That's the best any of us can do. And you did it well. You've got three great apples there. It's close to the root system. So, well, hey, we have already come to the fun segment of the big show here, where we ask the same three questions of every guest. And I will tell you, Mark, so season 13, a handful of guests in season 13, I forgot to tell them about the fun segment. So it's been very on the spot. Now I'm going to blow your cover here. You can't blame that. I can't be blamed for that today, because I know you've listened. And so, so I know you've at least heard other people respond. So we're excited to hear you answer these three questions. So fun segment question number one, if Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow morning, and just wanted to hang out for the day, you got a whole day with Jesus, what are you going to do with Jesus?
I would love to. So here's what I think I would do. I'd love to take him to church. and then I would really like to, I would love to get Jesus' view and opinion on how we can unify the church. Right? One thing that I would just love to see is there's, get his viewpoint on how we can, just unify into one body. And, I think there's the possibilities would just be tremendous. I think so much there's there's denominational walls, or there's traditional walls, or there's, just beliefs that are, that are not true doctrine beliefs, but just little things here that sort of divide the church and the body of Christ. And I would love to get his take on how, how could we unify that to be a, one unified voice in this world. That's, I would love to be able to, and obviously having Jesus for a day would put a lot of amplification around the message and the solution there. So that was just something I would love to.
That's great.
Be able to see us do.
Yeah. I think that is time well spent and dividends that would pay out a lot from across the world. I love that.
For sure.
All right. Fun segment question number two. If you could go to church, okay, so you can't say Jesus, you've already used him. So if you could go to church with any other man, living or dead, famous or not, who would the guy be that you would bring to church?
Yeah, this is there's a lot of possibilities there, but when I think about that, one person that I would love to spend time with would be the Apostle Paul, right? I think it's such an interesting life he got to live. and so I think it'd be fascinating to just spend time and attend church with him. There's the challenges, both real life physical as well as what he went through spiritually. I just think it's such a fascinating story, and it's one of those ones that someday down the road, that would be, I think there would be some fascinating conversations with him as well.
Oh, I totally agree. He'd be good. Yeah. And if you did bring him with Jesus to church, you know, during all the readings, you could be like, all right, Paul, you wrote this. What did you mean? Let's go. Let's workshop this, guys. Let's get this going.
Yeah, how cool would that be?
I love it. All right. Last question. Fun segment. Question number three. If you could give one, just one piece of advice to a younger man, of your son years ago as a teenager doing all those sporting events or whatever. But it's just going to be one piece of advice to give to a younger man further upstream about living the life you're living, a confident, courageous life of faith, but a normal life of faith, you know, what would that one piece of advice be?
This one I had an answer for, thought through, and I'll give you. This is what I would call you. I'll give you the encapsulated version of my father, the bride speech for my oldest daughter that was married last year. Huh? Because you know, in that same context, right? You try to you tell stories of your daughter and son-in-law, and then you try to give advice. And so what I spoke to there was the analogy I made is. Was related to cars, right? You can drive a car without ever looking at an owner's manual and you'll be successful in being able to drive it. There's the, but if you ignore the elements of maintenance that are documented in an owner's manual, your vehicle's not going to last as long as it should, right? And if you don't also read the owner's manual, you'll probably find out that there's lots of features and that vehicle would have, you know, have that you never would know about, right? There's, the, you know, you know the basics, but you miss out on a lot of the, cool features and capabilities that vehicle has, right? So that's analogy obviously goes to, if you've got to know, the owner's manual for life has been written too, right? And we've got one author with lots of different writers at it. And so the advice I give is, you can live life without the owner's manual or reading the Bible and living in the Word, but there's so much in there if you can build that as part of your life, right? There's the there's features in there that'll make your life, and in the context that when I gave this originally, right, in a marriage, that will just strengthen that for life. And then there's such a richness in there that you can learn about if you spend time in there. So the advice I would give to a teenager would be the same thing, right? If you just learn that it's not not just a historical book. It is, it's the living Word. There's just elements in there that are so useful. And I think any of us that have been get into the habit just realize that it's, every time you open it, there's something in there. And if you can instill that in a young person, the possibilities are endless, I think.
Yeah. I love that. That's, I'm ripping that off. I'm going to use that.
You're welcome. I probably got it written down in a longer version somewhere on my phone. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll nab that from you someday and then take. Oh, I'll give you credit. I'm not gonna take all the credit, but it's beautiful because the reason it's beautiful is because that owner's manual is the manual for everything. You know, it's not just about being devout. It's not just about what happens on Sunday. It is the manual for every single piece of life, whether it's marriage, friendship, work. Just getting through it. So it's wonderful. So Mark, thank you so much for taking this time. It was so great to be able to spend a little bit more time with you and kind of get to know you along with everybody else listening. So thanks for being such a great tree out there in the world, bearing great fruit. And next time we talk, I promise I won't be so idiom heavy, and we can just kind of talk like a couple of normal guys. But thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.